All right, let's begin this morning's session. The first speaker is Juan Maldacena, subject Eternal Black Holes and ADS.
This is based on a paper that will appear soon. So one of the most interesting problems in string theory is to understand spatial singularities, cosmological singularities, and cosmological spacetimes. So the plan of this talk is to describe one such time-dependent background, which contains a cosmological type singularity in a non-perturbative way. So this background is the interior of black holes. So I'm going to argue that we can understand how to describe the interior of black holes in a completely non-perturbative and exact way. And then this is the simplest example of a cosmological spacetime. And then I'm going to say some words about the information paradox. So what we're going to do is we're going to use ADS-EFT. Sometimes I'll talk about the three-dimensional case for clarity, but this can be done in any case. Now, we know that big black holes in ADS are thermal states in the conformal field theory. So we have the boundary. The boundary is a cylinder, time times a sphere. In this case is just this circle, and inside we have a big black hole. The Penrose diagram of this situation, the Penrose diagram of an eternal black hole, is this diagram that I've written down here. So it contains, these are the boundaries. So it contains two copies of the boundary, and this is past and future singularities. Now, this is very similar to the Schwarzschild, to the Penrose diagram of the extended Schwarzschild black hole. In the Schwarzschild black hole, there are two regions here, and these two regions are flat space, two copies of the flat space region. In this case, we have two copies of the ADS asymptotic boundary conditions, the asymptotic boundary, which is ADS. Now, the question is, what is this space-time describing, or more precisely, how do we describe this space-time in a non-perturbative way? What is the meaning of these two boundaries? Why we have two boundaries? And what are these regions close to singularity? So what is the dual field theory that describes the system? So we have two boundaries. Therefore, we'll have two copies of the field theory. So the proposal will be that we'll describe this using two copies of the field theory that describes a single ADS. So the Hilbert space is the direct product of the Hilbert space of theory 1 and the Hilbert space of theory 2. Each of these theories is defined on a cylinder R cross S1. So we have two separate theories. These two copies, these two theories, do not interact. So we have two non-interacting field theories. And then we have to say what's the state that we are considering, and the state we consider is this particular entangled state. So it's a state which is not a direct product of a state in theory 1 and theory 2, but it's a sum of such direct products. So the state is the following. So you take, you sum over all the states in the theory, and you take the state with energy E in theory 1, you tensor it with the state with energy E in theory 2, you sum over all energies with this weight. So it's essentially the thermal weight divided by 2. We'll see in a second why we should take this state to describe this particular space-time. So the space-time is describing, this is the state at time equal to 0, and then the space-time is that we saw is the state when we evolve this state with the sum of the boundary Hamiltonians. So the state at time t is we take the state and we can evolve it to the future and the past, and this space-time is describing the amplitude that the system starts with this state and ends with this state. That amplitude is 1, so this amplitude is 1, and so in order for this to be 1, so you need that this normalization factor is the thermal partition function. Now, this construction of two copies of the field theory with this particular initial state and this particular final state is something completely standard in real-time thermal field theory. It goes under the name of thermal field dynamics and was originally described by Martin and Schwinger, and Keldysh had something similar. And this is something completely standard in the condensed matter literature. And the reason this is related to thermal, real-time thermal physics, is that if we consider expectation values on this particular state of operators that depend only on, that are defined only on theory one, so they depend only on the operators of theory one. This could be any product of operators evaluated at different times and so on. So if we take these expectation values, we don't have anything uncertain in theory two, so we essentially get the delta function of the energies in theory two, and we get the usual thermal expectation value with the trace of the density matrix. So this is a convenient formalism for computing thermal expectation values, and that's why people use it. Just using the usual rules, we know very well how to treat perturbation theory and so on with, when we start with a pure state, and so people do this, use this trick to apply the same rules and use this as the initial pure state. So the thermal expectation values are reduced to computing these things with this pure state. So if you view it as a state in theory only, as a state living in the product of a Hilbert space, is a pure state. If we trace over H2, we get the density matrix in theory one. And the entropy of this state is entanglement entropy. All these are purely statements in field theory. And so just to make this a little clearer, let's do this for a harmonic oscillator. So suppose we want to consider a harmonic oscillator. Then the pure state, so then we take two copies of the harmonic oscillator. So we have two copies of a Hilbert space, and we consider this initial pure state. We can build this as a squeezed state on the vacuum in this way. And there are Bogoliubov of transformations which allow us to define new operators, new creation and annihilation operators, which are combinations of the two creation and annihilation operators of the two states, that are such that with respect to this new creation and the corresponding annihilation operators, this thermal state is a vacuum state. So that is, it's annihilated by this annihilation operators. So these operators are the operators that create thermal particles. So when you create an excitation in the system, are combinations of excitations on one side and the other side. Now, this vacuum state is annihilated by this H tilde Hamiltonian, let's say, which is the difference of the two Hamiltonians. So H tilde is a symmetry of the system, since H1 and H2 are symmetries of the system, and also it annihilates the vacuum, so it's a correct symmetry of the system. Now, if we define what we're going to do later, so people who do thermal physics, they normally are interested in defining evolution with this Hamiltonian. We're not going to do that. We're going to consider the Hamiltonian, which is the sum of the two Hamiltonians. And if we do that, then this state, psi beta, is a time-dependent state. Okay. So we're considering this particular time-dependent state. Now, just for general information, this also goes under the name of the closed contour formalism, where in order to do that path integral, people normally take contours that go forward in time, then go beta over 2 in imaginary time, go backward, and so on. And that's equivalent to what I described before. But we're not going to use this very much. Now, let's go back to the gravity solution. So we have this space-time. So we have the two boundaries, or the two copies of the field theory. This particular solution has an isometry, which is generated by essentially what we would call the time direction here outside the black hole. And this, the orbits of this Killing vector are time-like here, space-like in this region, and time-like in this region. And here they go backwards in time. And so this, this Killing symmetry is associated with the symmetry generated by this difference of the two Hamiltonians. Okay. Now, so this geometry as it is It's just the leading semi-classical approximation to the state that I wrote down in the previous transparency. Now, if we want to do a little better, we have to say what is the state of the quantum fields that live on this spacetime. So we have to specify the states of the quantum fields. So we have to quantize fields on this background. Now, this background is a background that is time dependent. So this Killing symmetry has nothing to do with time because here it goes backward in time. So we shouldn't use this to quantize the system. So this background is time dependent, and well, we need some prescription for choosing a state. Now, choosing a state in the field theory is equivalent to choosing a set of positive frequency solutions. So for this spacetime, there is a prescription that was given by Hartle, Hawking, and Israel, which consists in defining the positive frequency solutions to be those that, when decomposed with respect to this, when evaluated on this line and decomposed with respect to this affine parameter, they have positive frequencies with the two horizons. So this gives a quantum state such that the expectation value of the stress tensor is non-singular, and these horizons is non-singular everywhere except at the singularities. The singularities, it becomes singular. And this quantum state is also invariant under translations by this H tilde, okay, as we require. So this is a good candidate state to match the state that we had before. And in the context of black holes, the fact that this Hartle-Hawking state is related to thermal field theory was noted by Israel in 1976. Now, what we are doing here is we're making this notion very precise in the context of ABS-EFT, and then we're going to use it to say, well, to argue that we can try to understand the interior of black holes in this way. So let me give one other argument for saying why this Hartle-Hawking state is the correct state, that it's the same as the state that we saw in the previous transparency. So this spacetime that we saw, this spacetime has a time reflection symmetry. So if we cut this spacetime here, it looks the same in the past and the future, and we can match that spacetime, that solution, to half the Euclidean black hole solution. Okay, so here this is half of the Euclidean black hole solution. This is the whole Euclidean black hole solution. So here, this is the bound. I'm only here drawing the time boundary. There is, of course, a circle. So everywhere in this spacetime, there's another circle, which is, well, or a sphere, depending on what kind of ADS space we are talking about. So here, I'm just drawing the time-like direction along the boundary. So the Euclidean black hole solution is just the boundary is a circle, and, well, the interior fills completely the circle. Okay. Now, purely in the field theory, if we are in the field theory, we can do this both in the field theory and in the gravity solution. And in the field theory, if we take this path integral along this circle and we cut it here, so whenever we cut the path integral in the time direction, we get a wave function. And here we are cutting it in two places, so we get a wave function for two defined on two Hilbert spaces, and this is the wave function we get. So why do we get with this wave function? Well, we know that we get the same wave function if we consider the bottom part and the top part. And we know that if we take the inner product, so if we integrate over the whole circle, we get the partition function. So this is essentially like the square root of the partition function. And so that's why we get this state. Now, considering this Euclidean state also sets sort of like an initial condition for the Hartle-Hawking state in the interior. Okay, so this is the state we have, and this is the state at time equal to zero. Okay. Notice that this kind of analytic continuation, this way of joining the Euclidean solution to Lorentzian signature, is different than what's usually done. What's usually done is to analytically continue the time direction here. I mean, this angle. This is slightly different. Okay, so we have that Hadley-Hawkins state, so we can now define our observables are going to be operators, correlation functions of operators that we define on these two boundaries. And defining the Hadley-Hawkins state is the same as defining a Green's function in this background, so we can use that Green's function to compute these observables. Now, this calculation is easiest for the BTC black hole. And it's easy because BTC is ADS3 divided by, is a quotient of ADS3. And in order to do the calculation, we need to notice that the positive frequency, the definition of what it means to be positive frequency when we are in ADS with global time, coincides with the definition of positive frequency in the Hadley-Hawkins state. And since we are doing just solving a free equations, we can use the method of images to calculate the correlation function. So it's a very simple calculation. In other examples, in other ADS spaces, it will be more complicated, but it can also be done. So here is the answer for ADS3. So we the correlation functions for operators on site 1 is given by this expression, and the sum over n is the sum of all the images. Yes?
When you say positive frequency in ADS3, do you mean with respect to which time?
Yeah, when I say that, that's positive frequency in ADS3, I meant before you take the quotient, okay? So you take global time in ADS3, so that definition of positive frequency. Then you take the quotient. That matches with this. I mean, that time direction is something complicated, but it has a positive inner product with this lilac direction. So then the definition of positive frequencies agree. Okay, so, and then we can also compute correlation functions of operators that are defined on different boundaries. Okay. Now, we have non-trivial correlation functions between operators defined on two different Hilbert spaces and completely different systems, just because we are taking an entangled state. This is completely standard. It's just the usual EPR paradox. So if you wish, this is a giant EPR experiment where we entangle the state so much that we create a bridge between the two systems, and the whole space-time is connecting the two systems. Okay, so how do we describe physics in the interior? Well, how do we describe a particle moving in the interior? Okay, so a particle is a small change in the state. How do we make a small change in the state? Well, we just do a small change in the state. more precisely, so we can take, so before we constructed the Hadley-Hawkins state by taking this, the path integral in Euclidean time in this way, and we can just insert an operator. So if we insert an operator, this will change the wave functions in the boundary theory, and also from the point of view of the interior, we also change the state of the field in the interior. And so that will define this, a change of the state at time equal to zero, and then we can evolve that change in the state backwards and forwards in time. So we know how to evolve the state, and then we just, whatever state we get, we just evolve it backwards and forward in time. Now we can evolve by different amounts with the time in one Hilbert space and the time in the other Hilbert space, so we have two sort of independent times. And for this state only depends on the sum of the two times, because we saw that it was annihilated by the difference of the two Hamiltonians, but in principle this could depend on two. This might be interesting for some other purposes. It's a reflection of the usual thing in GR that we can evolve differently in time in different regions. For what we're going to do, we're going to set P1 equal to T2, just for simplicity. Okay, so if we want to describe anything in the interior, we need to describe, let's say we want to describe a scattering amplitude here in the interior of the black hole. How do we describe that? First, there is, of course, people normally say that you can't define scattering amplitudes here. There are no asymptotic states, and of course that's true. But we should be able to define them in an approximate way. And in any case, well, this an observer here can do experiments, and we should be able to explain how to compute the results of those experiments. Okay, so in principle, what we have to do is to, let's say, cut the state here and cut it here and compute this, the amplitude of these two, just compute that amplitude. Now the problem is how to cut at a given time. So we know what we mean by a given time on the boundary, but we don't know what we mean by a given time in the interior. This is a time-dependent background. Well, so let me first give a prescription, and then we'll see whether we have to change it. So the prescription will be to say that we fix two times here at the boundary. We're going to cut it along a spatial geodesic. Now, why we take a spatial geodesic? Well, if we compute something like the this correlation function, the same correlation function I described before between an operator here and an operator on the other side, if this operator has large conformal dimension, this correlation function is given by a particle propagating along the spatial geodesic. And so since this is an equal time correlation function, it's reasonable to think that equal time is related to the trajectory of this geodesic. Yes?
Sorry, space is two-dimensional. It's 2+1.
Yeah, there is also, there is the circle, of course. The circle, there is a translation symmetry on the circle. Yes, or the sphere in some other direction. So here the only thing that is hard is the time and radial direction. The rest is completely symmetric. I should say the circle direction is becoming of zero size here, and that's why we have the singularity. Okay, so in principle, so when we say that we have the boundary state, the state on the boundary theory at time t, what we are going to say is that that corresponds to cutting the Hadley-Hawking state along this line. Okay, so what does it mean to have certain particles on this? On this slice. Well, what it means, so we understood already what it meant to have just a single particle. So we just can evolve that and we'll get a certain state at time t. So different particles would be the superposition, the sum here at this time of these states. Okay? Now this sum could be different than the sum of, this is different than taking the sum of two states at t equal to zero and evolving them. I hope that's clear, because if we take two states at t equal to zero that are separated, they can scatter and form a complete superposition of states. They are not two well-defined particles. So that's so the way we construct particles at time equal to t is to first consider just each particle individually, and then we sum all the states at time equal to t. Okay? And we can do, well, we do that for the initial state and the final state. Okay, so if we are interested in some process that happens over some small amount of time in the interior, we just fix that at time equal t1 and then time equal t2, and we compute this amplitude. So we compute the amplitude. The amplitude is just, we define these two states, and we just compute this amplitude. This is the amplitude that an experimentalist in this universe would measure. And, well, more precisely, we need to include the wave function of the experimentalist, but this is, of course, an obvious problem. But no, it's not the problem, it's the obvious feature that we need to include. Now, and the singularity is just the failure of the free particle description. So we cannot write the state as a sum of individual little fluctuations that will evolve, independently. So if we really were infinitely powerful to analyze the field theory, we would be able to make little fluctuations and say whether they evolve independently or not. So, yes?
Mm-hmm. What do you mean an experimentalist measures? If there are a bunch of experimentalists and they can't talk to each other?
No, the experimentalist is the experimentalist. So there is an experimentalist that comes.
There are a whole bunch of them all along the space line.
Yeah, there are different, but, well, you see, the experimentalist sees this whole region, okay?
Well,
yeah, some region. He doesn't care about what happens outside. And so what he would do is trace over all the other particles, right? So when he computes this amplitude, he traces over all the other particles. So we can do that here also. And then what we measure is the amplitude that this, there is some correlation between the wave function of the experimentalist seeing this and, well, the usual story, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So if we were, if we really understood the field theory very well, we would be able to say that we have these fluctuations that describe effectively some, in an approximate way, a certain Fock space. And this kind of, and we can also see the failure of that. So if at some point when we have a sum of two particles, they evolve in a different way than they would evolve individually, then we say that they have scattered. Okay, we don't need to have this other interpretation to say that they have scattered. And so in this way, we can sort of check this in principle. I don't know how to do it in practice, but in principle, we could check this idea of exactly where the surface is. Because if that scattering, suppose you send two particles here and the scattering occurs on a certain surface, by looking at this diagram, then by looking at the exact quantum state, you can also see that the two-wave packets come and they scatter, and they scatter at a certain time, and so you can relate the two times. So this, even though it was an unmotivated prescription, in principle, it could be checked by considering scattering amplitudes. Okay. So by considering trajectories of particles and so on, you could start building this spatial cross section. And of course, all of this is approximate, as it should be. Now, when does the singularity appear? So you can check when the spatial geodesic gets close to the singularity. And it gets close to the singularity pretty fast. Well, here I haven't drawn it in a very nice way. This is conformal. So, but what happens is that after you travel for a time of around beta here, the singularity is very close to Planck distance. This geodesic is very close, is at the Planck distance away, or Planck time away from the singularity. The precise formula is this formula here. Okay, so this is in principle how we should compute in this spacetime. Now that we understood this, I'm going to show you a paradox with this picture. And this is just old information loss paradox. So let me review the information Hawking's argument. So we take a black hole in a. So the Hawking's argument was for formation of a black hole. You take a black hole, it forms, horizon forms, and then thinks that correlation functions measured at late times are independent of the initial state. Okay. Now, and all correlations, there of course here there could be gravitons that travel from the state to the correlation function, but all those correlations decay exponentially fast. Okay, and they decay like T over beta. This is the rate of decay of those correlations. Now the information, this information paradox is much sharper in ADS space than in flat space. Because, of course, we expect that correlations are going to be small. And we can be worried that in the Schwarzschild black hole in flat space, we won't have enough time to make them decay enough. And actually, we don't have enough time. We will later see that that's what's wrong in the argument. But in ADS, we can wait as long as we want. So if you want this to be smaller than 10 to the e to the minus 10 to the 10 to the 10, you can wait, no problem. So we can wait very, very long, and so we remove all the information about the initial state. Now let's consider the simplest such situation. So a simplest situation is when we consider a slightly non-thermal state. So we had our original thermal state, and let's change slightly the density matrix. And so we want to detect this change in the density matrix. So how do we change the density matrix? Well, if we insert an operator here, that's the same as changing the density matrix. Of course, we could have done other things like sending a particle from here and so on. Those are other different changes of the density matrix. But inserting an operator is sort of a simple one. And then what we try to do is we try to see whether we can detect that change by doing measurements here in theory one. Okay, so we're going to interpret this as a new density matrix for theory one, and we're going to make measurements at late times. Okay, so let's compute the expectation value of the operator O1 after tracing, or well, in this state, at very late times. Now, the expectation value of the operator O in theory 1, if we do not insert the operator in theory 2, is equal to 0. Okay, let's take an operator such that this correlation function is equal to 0. Then, when we change the density matrix, that's the same as computing this two-point correlation function on the original state, and that's the correlation function we just wrote in the previous transparency, in some transparencies ago, and that's given by, well, that decays exponentially. So, well, maybe I should show you the formula again.
Is that the two-point function or the commutator?
That's the two-point function. That's the expectation. Commutators vanish, of course. Okay, so this is this was the expression for the two-point function, and due to this hyperbolic cosine, we see that it decays exponentially. Okay.
So that decays independent of sum over n?
Yeah. You see that the sum over n, I chose this one so that we wouldn't get, we could have done it also here, but since there is this minus sign, we might be worried about that. So I chose this example because it's simpler. So the sum over n is conversion, so we just sum, and then we see that it decays exponentially. Okay? Okay, so how do we solve this? So clearly this is not the right feature. So if we have a unitary theory, correlation functions cannot decay exponentially. Okay, that string theory solved this. So standard lore is that strings are extended objects, and therefore arguments based on local field theory, as we had before, and the usual arguments are not valid. Therefore, in string theory, maybe you get a non-decaying correlator. That's very well, but now we can actually do the calculation, the string theory calculation. Because ADS3 is an SL2R WCW model, the BTC black hole is a quotient of such a model, and all we do is, if we want to calculate just the correlation at a tree level, we just, doing this quotient is equivalent to summing over the images, so we can do the correlation function in the covering space, and in the covering space, the answer is the same as in field theory, and summing over the images, the answer will be exactly the same as in field theory. And so we get the same exponential decay. So string theory does not solve this problem. Yes. Okay. Now, if loops are included, maybe you could solve it. I think you probably won't be able to solve it, and you'll see why in the next transparency. Before we get too scared about this problem, we need to estimate how big are these correlations expected to be. Well, let's do a simple calculation. Let's consider a unitary theory and compute this correlation function. So unitary theory, so a simple model. Let's take a very long string that wraps k times on the circle. This has been used as a model of black holes. And so k is essentially 1 over the Newton constant. And so you take this operator we are talking about is sort of symmetric under all the different strands. And so when we take all these different strands in this long string configuration, that's the same as having a single scalar field, and we evaluate this operator at various times. So we can construct the operator, this state, this thermal state, and compute this two-point function. And this computation gives a result which is the same as what we got in supergravity or string theory, but made periodic in time. Okay, it's obvious why it should be periodic in time. It's periodic in time because this all the energies of this long string are multiples of a single energy quantum, which is this so-called energy gap, which is 1 over k. Okay, so if this is the plot of what this correlation function is, so this correlation function, well, it starts being big, so it decays exponentially. And then after a while it becomes big again. So how small is this point? So we're going to interpret this as the smallest correlations we need in order to make the that are implied by unitarity. I mean, it's clear it's a unitary model, so we can live with correlations so small as this one. So this time is roughly related to, well, 1 over this energy gap, and it's that's of order k. And so this time is proportional to 1 over g Newton. So, and it's equal to e to the minus the entropy of the system. Well, yeah, this is not supposed to be anything deep. This is just saying that it is this formula, average in this particular way. Maybe I should just write it. I'm not saying anything deep there. I'm just doing that computation, and I'm just saying that what we get is that correlation function is equal to sum over m, and this answer, sum over n, 1 over cosine hyperbolic tau plus m k over beta plus cosine hyperbolic phi plus 2 pi n over beta. Yeah, I'll move out. Okay, so this is the answer. Okay? So it's a sum over n and m. The sum over n comes from this sum that we already had in the definition of the operator, and this one comes from the periodicities of the energy. Okay?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm calculating the correlation function between two opposite sides. Yeah. I could have done this one. The thing is, here, in order to argue that this decays exponentially, you need to treat correctly this I epsilon prescription. And it does decay exponentially. So if you integrate over phi and you treat correctly this I epsilon prescription, it decays exponentially. I didn't want to get into that. This is a simpler problem, simpler to explain. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now that we understand that these correlation function, these correlations, these expected correlations, are non-perturbative in G, so we understand that, well, probably if you do the calculation in string theory to all loops, we'll not get it. At least it would be consistent not to get any correlation. So we shouldn't be too worried about that. But certainly non-perturbative, we should get the correlations. So how do we get those? How do we get non-decaying correlations? And the answer is that we should sum over geometries. So we should remember that that state that we wrote in some previous transparencies, that state that we have in the field theory, is not represented by a single geometry. As Witten showed, that the thermal state in Euclidean space should be thought of as a sum over different geometries. And so here, this is the leading contribution. But then we have another contribution which consists of two separate ADS spaces with particles that are in some correlated state. Okay? Now, when we compute the correction due to this geometry, so here we insert this operator that will, let's say, remove one of the particles here and correlatedly remove a particle on the other side, and then we can wait as long as we want. And we'll always see that there is a particle missing here. Okay? So this is a non-decaying correlator.
What is the new geometry?
Yeah, this is okay. So yeah, this is two empty ADS spaces. So this is a cylinder. Here this is r equal to zero, and this is r equal to infinity. And they have a gas of particles of supergravity excitations correlated in this thermal way.
Making the same energy
from the top? No, the energy is not fixed. The same is what we fix is the temperature. So the statement I was making was that the density matrix was a sum of was this particular sum. You could make the question of what if I eliminate this state? Well, there will be. Yes.
So here, you want to consider this sum is dominated by a certain energy. You want to consider that sum state very well.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. What you want to
by? Yeah. Well, I'm considering this the particular problem of considering this density matrix, and so what I'm saying makes sense for this. You could try to now start changing the problem and say, well, what if I take some states out of this sum? And then the argument should go as, well, it should not be consistent to consider only one state, but there should be some other state. It would be harder to describe, but again, some other sum over different geometry. I restrict to this particular example because we know in this case exactly what the answer is. And yeah.
So here the geometry that you have two is joined vacuum ADS.
Yeah.
And they are entangled each other.
Well, it's not the vacuum, because if it was the vacuum, then this correlation function would be zero. So it's necessary to have some extra particles. And so we have some extra particles, and the particles are the ones that are entangled. Okay. Now, what is the amplitude of this relative to that? Well, there are not many states like this, and we know from the expression of the state that there is this normalization factor. And so this normalization factor, this is a very large factor. Well, very small. I mean, the denominator is very large. The numerator, is the whole thing is very small. And it's equal to e to the minus the entropy, roughly. So this is exactly of the form that we needed. So it has precisely the form that we needed to solve that problem. Okay, so what about, well, now let me make a slight detour to general structured black holes in any number of dimensions. So we can ask whether correlation, I mean, there was this statement that correlations decay with the initial state. The maximum they can decay is the evaporation times divided by beta. And in all these cases, the evaporation in all cases, evaporation time divided by beta is equal to the e to the minus the entropy. And that's the size of expected correlations. There is no argument that the final state is not correlated with the initial state. Okay, so I guess it would be nice to understand more realistic cosmologies, so other situations where we don't have the cosmology that lives inside the black hole, but more realistic cosmologies, more interesting initial singularities. And also, it would be nice to study ADS-CFT with many boundaries, other situations with many boundaries. And all those situations, I think something similar should happen, that you have many copies of the field theory in some kind of entangled states. It's quite interesting that in order to understand these situations, it's really important to use quantum mechanics in an important way. It's really important to use this property of entangled states. Okay, so now let me mention something amusing. So this is probably part of the future. So that was the conclusion. That's the end of the talk. Now let's go back to this system that we had, the ADS black holes. So we essentially have of the order of n states that are contributing to that sum. I mean, all the other states are contributing very little. As we evolve those states in time, we are putting some phases here. Okay, so we don't have exactly the state we had when we started with, but we have some other state. Now we can ask, so these n states and these n phases with which the n states are moving define this some kind of n-dimensional torus. And time evolution is a straight line, well, it's some trajectory in that torus. And the question is whether after a really long time, well, it is a fact that after a really long time, we can get very close to the to situation where all these phases almost vanish. Okay. So after a very long time, we go back to the initial state, so the state at time equal to zero. But we might not go back exactly. We go back to slightly, the phases are slightly different from zero, and so we get some extra particles. So if we were to start the system, if we were to start these two field theories in configuration that is describing this connected system, so after a while, we hit the singularity, there are some problems. But after a really long time, we again get the same system, but with some other particles. This is a universe which comes out of this Big Bang, has a big crunch. Well, evolves non-geometrically in some way. Maybe there is some geometric interpretation to this, I don't know. But what's clear is that after a very long time, there is again a geometric interpretation. And a geometric interpretation where, since these phases are not exactly one, we'll have some extra particles living on this space. And so we get to start over and over again. So if the universe you produce, if you didn't like the universe you produce, you will wait, and maybe next time you'll get a nicer universe. of course, this is not what we expect for our universe. We want it to be unique and so on. But well, this is what we get in this if we did this. So if we had two conformal field theories, we had this kind of setup, we'll get a situation where at certain times we can use geometric description, sometimes we can't, and so on. Well, that's all.
Please, will questioners wait for the mic if possible? Here's our question.
So I wanted to better understand what physical question you're asking that leads to the two-point function as opposed to the commutator. Ordinarily, if we want to investigate what one might do is one might look at the expectation value of an operator, say, on the right-hand side, and then change the state on the left-hand side, and
right.
That would typically lead to a commutator, not just a two-point function, just a two-point function.
Yeah.
So, what is the physical question you're asking that leads to the actual two-point function?
I'm defining that I'm computing the two-point function in this boundary theory. I can do this. This is something I can do.
Yes, so what is the physical question that corresponds to, though?
Well, it's not any obvious physical. It's the correlation between measuring something here and measuring the same thing on their side. So two experimentalists sit on these two boundaries, and one measures that the value of the field close to the boundary was a certain value, and then the other one measures some other value, and they talk to each other, and they ask, well, what did you measure? And they compare, and they take the product, and that's
given okay, by this but boundary. If you had actually changed the state on one side and then looked at observables on the other side, you would really get the commutator, right?
Well, I think what you have in mind is starting with a state, changing it, and then asking what's the overlap with all the possible states. That's a different question. So here we are taking an initial state and then putting the same final state. So whenever we calculate correlation function, we are saying what the initial state and final state. For the kind of question you have in mind, you're allowed to change the final state. And yeah, that would give a different answer. I should say, yeah, notice that this is very small. It's a very small number. It's very small correlation. So if you indeed made a change, if you insert this operator, the leading thing that will happen is that there will be a particle going in. Okay? So the leading this is what we just calculated is a very subleading thing. Okay. This is more or less standard even in quantum field theory in flat space. Okay? You take this is time, you insert an operator here and an operator here. Okay? This correlation function is non-vanishing. Okay? Why it is non-vanishing? Because we're imposing, we have in the vacuum on the other side, okay? And that's this correlation function is entanglement, if we wish, of the vacuum state. But if we were to insert this operator, so if we just insert this operator, the leading thing that happens is that the particle comes out.
So previously, in asking about the information loss problem, people were worried about possible duplication of information inside and outside the black hole, and that was resolved by realizing that we actually have to worry about whether these observers that are measuring correlators can in fact talk to each other or not.
Right.
Does that show up anywhere here? Because
here the things that can be measured are things that make reference to the Hilbert spaces that are defined on these two conformal field theories. So there are these two observers, if you wish, and those are the ones making the measurement.
But they are in a different infinity, so they can't really talk to each other.
Well, yeah, they can. I mean, not through the space-time. They cannot send signals through the space-time, but, how could I say? I mean, in some meta system, right?
But I mean, I thought the lesson from the black hole complementarity argument was that there should not be a meta system, or else you run into this.
No, yeah, I explained you don't run into any contradiction. Okay. I don't think you run into. Yeah.
So are these observers related in some EPR sense? In other words, if they are causally disconnected.
Yes.
I mean, there's still one Hilbert space that is describing the in region and the out and the out region, right? In region and the out region, right?
Yeah. It's like having two photons that are far away,
right?
But they came from right. Single state.
So in principle, this picture would make perfect sense even for the cosmological horizon, right?
Well, I haven't thought very much about the cosmological horizon. Maybe there is something similar.
From the geometric point of view, it's the same, right?
I don't know. I don't see a precise connection. So to the extent that this is a cosmology, I don't understand precisely your question, I guess.
Just take a static region of, let's say, the sitter. It would be just the inside of that.
I think this agrees with many people have been saying that to describe quantum gravity, you need the different Hilbert spaces and take them together and so on. I guess Tom Banks was using this idea yesterday. And, well, something like that would probably be true, but the problem is, in this case, the question is made very precise because we have the Hilbert space that lives in this boundary theory, and that's the Hilbert space that we're using for this construction. Here we cannot talk about the Hilbert space in some region of space-time. That doesn't make sense here. Now, of course, you can, when I was talking about the scattering amplitudes, so we had to talk about these small fluctuations around this state, and well, in that sense, you can make a Fock space around this particular entangled state. So that's similar to these thermal particles we discussed in the example of the harmonic oscillator. So we can create those particles that are also entangled state. So we create them by acting with operators on both sides.
One, there's something that I'm not sure I understood. In the beginning, when you were talking about the Schwinger-Keldysh formalism, you told us that this was a way to measure correlation functions in a single field theory, just thermal expectation values. Then later on, you were talking about using this formalism to calculate something you wanted to identify with approximately with scattering amplitudes as measured by somebody inside the black hole.
Yes.
And I wondered whether you're saying that there's some standard field theory thermal correlation function in the boundary theory that you would want to identify with that internal scattering amplitude in some approximate way. Or is it something that you wouldn't calculate normally in thermal field theory?
I don't know how to say it precisely, because when you go to the boundary, there could have been many interactions before the particles got to the interior.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe there is another way of doing it, but the way I see how to do it is to make these slices and considering small fluctuations around the quantum state. This is not something you would, well, yeah, I think this is something that makes sense to do in a quantum theory. It doesn't correspond to an obvious correlation function. In other words, what I'm saying is essentially that that by the time you get to the interior, right, you want to describe the scattering amplitude, right? And so maybe this is defined in terms of some operators you insert here. But the final state is hard to define because, well, yeah, it's scattered, and so then, so it's sort of like a backward scattering. So it's a superposition of many things. This is the. Let's consider just the usual field theory. Why do you like to define the out state in terms of out creation operators and the in state in terms of in creation operators? Why couldn't you define the out state in terms of in creation operators? You could, but then you have to solve the scattering problem. And so that's why here it's hard to do things from the boundary, because it would be equivalent to solving already the problem. Well, yeah. So you can compute in this formalism all correlation functions, and it's true you can compute all correlation functions. But computing, there is a non-trivial map between the correlation functions and the particles in the interior. That's where if you want to use this to calculate scattering amplitudes in the interior, that's the map that would be hard to. That's why you need to make these time slices to make that map more sort of manifest. So when you're calculating a scattering amplitude, you're asking a very specific question, okay? Now, indeed, you can calculate the scattering amplitude by putting some operators here and putting some other operators in the future, but this particle can scatter with many other particles in between, and you need to solve the full problem in order to calculate the scattering amplitude. Okay? It's just
I have a question. To what extent can you really say that your geometry in the interior is this eternal black hole geometry, if indeed in resolving certain correlation functions you need other saddle points in your path integral?
Yeah.
So it's not even, normally you would think, well, perhaps if I don't haven't measured something yet, the state might be a superposition of different classical geometries, but if I would send an observer there and he would make his measurement, then he would at least be able to tell me whether this is the black hole geometry or this other eternal ADS geometry.
No.
But that cannot be, because obviously then I would get back into your
Certainly the leading geometry is this black hole geometry, but you cannot make sure that an observer measures the black hole geometry with a precision of e to the minus s. That was the point there.
So
when people, when one thinks about keeping the information and so on, one is talking about making precision measurements with a precision of e to the minus s, and we cannot do those. There is no argument that we can make those measurements in a given geometry. You have to sum over geometries, because the effects of that order of magnitude come from summing over geometries.
Let's thank our speaker again.